Welcome to the NCCF Teaching Podcast. We trust you'll find this encouraging. Thank you and God bless.
I like the fact that it's 10 till and I don't feel rushed, because I want to keep what I have to share at a level of humility and at a level of ease, because the topic that I want to share on here this morning has the potential of, I don't know, it's just Tiffany and I were talking the last couple of days about it, and it's like, this is not an easy topic to actually bring up. If you're going to stand up and talk about raising children, then that presumes a couple of things. First, that you're the expert, which I am not. And secondly, that you're all doing it wrong, which you're not. And so I don't want those ditches on either side of this. I want us to enter into a conversation where we realize that this is a journey of learning and a process of discovery as we, as adult parents, are learning how to be parented by God. As we as adults are learning how to nurture healthy relationships. As we as adults are learning how to let Jesus come in and heal our broken places from our childhood. You know, those things really are dynamics that impact us and affect how we respond and how we relate to those little people that are growing up in our house. And then I realized that when I'm sharing in a group like this, that there's a wide spectrum of ages, which I absolutely love about this fellowship. I love that there can be 3 and 4 generations of families sitting here in this room right now. So what that means is that some of you, your children are adults, and they're having children. And yet as grandparents, there's a place that you have in those little kids' lives, a place that you still have in your adult children's lives that's really special, and it's unique for who you are in their life. And so maybe there could be some encouragements even for you. And then there might be some in this room that don't have kids, aren't thinking about that. It's not even remotely on their radar. And that's fine too. And so there might be some things in what we share that can relate to you personally, can relate to all of us, can relate to even myself as I was preparing, that I remind myself, I am a child. And the things that I want to nurture in my children, God wants, hopefully, if I have a kingdom IQ that's kind of raising up a little bit and thinking, like, how can I echo this parenting relationship that I have with the Father and my children? If I become that place of reflection back to my children, what I can experience from the Father. Some of these might be encouragements for each one of us in our own personal journey as children of God. So hopefully we'll cover enough, and it will hit us in a way that is a soft landing and nothing smacks you upside the head. Because the last thing I want to do, and I'll just put voice to this, the last thing I want is for shame to enter into this room. Shame is a sledgehammer. And it has no place here in this space, because the one thing that could generate shame in our hearts as parents is the idea or the notion or the accusation or the diminishment from the enemy of our soul that we're bad parents. I think that sends me down that spiral faster than most things. So I just want to encourage you that there's a lot of hope, I believe and I hope, in what I have to say. So as I was sharing, Tiffany and I spent some time talking about raising kids. It seems recently that some of our younger friends have been asking us how we did it. They would say something like, how did you raise 4 amazing humans? Well, this is where humility has to come in, because I realized that I didn't really want to, I don't know, just be that voice of expertise without the honest conversation about the fact that we struggled at this. I mean, there were times and seasons of our life, and even going into parenting, where we felt very ill-equipped and we were scared, spitless. And I certainly don't want to put any pressure on my children, two of which are here right now. I don't want to put any pressure on them to perform or keep up some kind of image of awesomeness just by bringing them up here in this conversation. I've always wanted them to simply be themselves wherever they're at and with whomever they're with, you know, so no pressure. It is true that they're pretty amazing humans. And honestly, my life has been very rich because of their love and their passion for life. It's been rich. And like I said, I have four of them. And the first thing I would like to do is I'd like to admit that as we entered in, we were super scared. And we felt very ill-equipped. And so I suppose if I were to point at a couple of dynamics that may have helped us along the way, it was probably first our experience. After we had first gotten married, Tiffany and I had gotten married, and we went out east and we started working as house parents for adjudicated youth. And so we had a group of like 12 kids that were from the streets of Philly and Pittsburgh and Baltimore and Jersey. And I mean, we had these kids and we were responsible for them. And so I guess for the first 3.5 or so years of our marriage before we had Rachel, our oldest, I would say that the first dynamic that helped us early in our parenting was being able to practice on other people's kids, which is really what we did, you know? And so I felt like, okay, we had a little bit of a slight advantage in that regard. And secondly, Tiffany will tell you that she did not grow up babysitting the neighborhood kids. She would much rather be outside roller skating than playing with dolls when she was a kid, right? Oh, yeah. And so for Tiffany, what triggered in her maternal instincts when she started having kids was nothing short of amazing to watch. Because she would never have put herself as, like, good with kids, that good with kids category. She wouldn't have put herself there early in her life. And yet when she started having kids, I just started to recognize this ability that she had to create an atmosphere of love and to create kind of an atmosphere of growth and exploration and faith with our girls. And so I just want to honor you, Tiffany, for just letting that happen and letting that emerge out of you. It's been amazing to watch. Tiffany and I have been married for 31 years, and our youngest is Zoe here, and she's 19. And so that kind of puts things into perspective that our oldest is going to be 28 this year. And so we have them stair-stepped up for about a decade. So over 10 years in diapers. I think if I had anything to nurture in this, I did nurture some spirituality with our kids. I nurtured some bravery, maybe some relational IQ. I felt like I had that. But honestly, I have to admit that it was really the presence of Jesus in their lives that sustained them, that is sustaining them. And so that's not kind of like this pat, humble answer. It's just like real. I would say that, you know, I remember hearing this story about a mom and her son. They were landing at an airport to visit the father. The father, he was on an extended work assignment, and so he was working in this other town for a couple of months. And so the mom and the son got on a plane and went to visit him for a weekend. And as they taxied to the terminal, the wife could see her husband in the big terminal window through their little plane window, right? Could see him standing there. And so the son was busy with his toys, and the mom says, "Look, honey, there's daddy." And she just kind of pointed that direction. And the kid briefly looked out the window and didn't see the dad, and so he was quickly back at his toys, just messing with his stuff. And it wasn't until the mom placed her hands on his face, on the side of his face, and steered his gaze towards the dad. And then he's like, "I see dad, I see dad, I see dad." And then she let her hands off of his face, and his interest in the toys just kind of disappeared because he was fixed. His gaze was fixed on daddy. And so I say that because I think what Tiffany did for our girls and what I feel like I had a hand at doing, she kept taking her hands and placing them on their faces and gently guiding their gaze back to him. And so when I say that, you know, the number one thing that we attribute, you know, in our parenting is their relationship with Jesus. I mean, that started really early. And I just want to voice that because it's important, I think, for us to make that a normal part of our family cultures. And I think that once they saw Jesus for themselves, and again, this is a process that we're all in, actually, as a family, but once we see Jesus for ourselves, then a lot of the distractions that try to fill that void, you know, they just kind of vanish. They just disappear. And so I think, to be fair and honest, each one of us in the Austin household, we still need help finding our focus sometimes. So I guess one of the things that I had to settle into as a Christian dad who grew up in a church culture that put the onus on the man of the house to literally, I mean, I remember hearing this as a young man before I even got married. I remember hearing it preached that the man of the house is responsible to be God to their children. And what I had to settle into was this notion that, first of all, I will never be God. Even to my kids. My job is not to be God until they find the real one. My job is to display the attributes of God, his character, all the while pointing their hearts and their minds towards God. And one way that I reinforced that, or one that we can reinforce that, was to openly express my need for God in front of my kids. So I think that is something that as parents we can be okay with. We can settle into this idea that your job is not to be God. Your job is to be like the mom on the plane and just help orient their gaze towards the one who will captivate their hearts. And I think for us to be able to voice our need and to be able to communicate through not only direct words but through our actions and through prayer and things like that in the context of our family life together, I think that speaks volumes. So that being said, one of the ways that Tiffany and I learned how to, quote, get out of the way a little bit, you know, and let them have this personal relationship with God, this may seem a little subjective for you, but again, I just want to bring some overarching ideas before we get into some more detailed ideas about parenting. But one of the overarching ideas was that for Tiffany and I, me especially, like I really struggled with, because I'm the dad and because I'm like a fix-it guy, like I love projects because I love to see like the end result sort of fix. For me to kind of get out of the way and to help my kids have this relational connection with God personally was we literally and prayerfully, we had to release our children into the love and the care of Jesus on a consistent basis. It was a way that we prayed. Jesus, I release Danielle into your love and to your care. If I'm like staying up in the wee hours of the night thinking about her situation, thinking about her scenario, any one of my kids, my wife included, any one of you, if I have this kind of like consuming thought about an individual and kind of stressing and worrying a little bit about the solution, a way that I might be able to offer help and so forth, there are times when I literally have to pray, God, I release them into your love and to your care. Because I trust that you're going to be able to care for them and love them and give them what they need in this situation better than I could. Now, that actually does not disengage me from them at all. It's actually the opposite. What releasing them into the love and the care of Jesus does is it makes room for us as parents to receive the kind of divine wisdom we need to steward their lives well. Does that make any sense? Okay, it's me taking my control freak hands off of it and letting Jesus speak into my life on how to steward my kid. because they're his kids. Okay, got that. So let me pause here and tell you a couple of thoughts that came to Tiffany and I as we were talking about helping our friends develop kingdom perspective when it comes to raising their kids. Both of these gain their footing from Proverbs 4. So if you have a Bible, I'd like to encourage you to turn to Proverbs 4. Like I said, there's no parent like the Father God, right? And his words instruct us well. The first comes from Proverbs 4:23. I want to read this in context. I'm going to start in verse 20. And here you'll catch the familial language. It's like the language of parenting, the language of a caring, loving father to a child. And so, my son, it starts with this in verse 20. My son, give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Don't let them depart from your sight. Keep them in the midst of your heart. For they are life to those who find them and health to all of their body. Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flows the springs of life. And put away from you a deceitful mouth, and put devious speech far from you. Let your eyes look directly ahead, and let your gaze be fixed straight in front of you, and watch the path of your feet, and all your ways will be established. Do not turn to the right or to the left. Turn your foot from evil. So again, verse 23, watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow those springs of life. I suppose one of the first things that we want our kids to do is to literally value their own hearts. I suppose, you know, if that were the case, then before we can really get into that and before we can really do that, like if we're going to help nurture this in our children, like, you can value your heart, like you can guard your heart. You can understand that your heart is an important, the most, like it's the wellspring of life flows from this place of your heart. Before we can do any of that, we have to understand that when the human heart is united with Christ, it is no longer deceitfully wicked. We have to get over this hurdle because some of us, we grew up distrusting our own hearts. We grew up devaluing our own hearts. And how then, as parents, can we nurture this in our children if we ourselves have yet to come to terms with the fact that when God looks at you, he sees a beautiful, powerful heart that has been redeemed. You've been given a new heart. Now, that is the truth. The facts, however, may speak differently to the fact that sometimes you might struggle with deception. Sometimes you might struggle with wickedness. Sometimes you might struggle with these things. But those are facts about how you're behaving. They're not truths about who you really are. Who you really are is what's important. Because who you really are and what we settle into is like, this is who I am. This is my identity. Guess what? Our behavior begins to follow suit with that genuine belief of our truest identity. Get what I'm saying? So we don't look so, I mean, we understand that there are facts, and those facts can even sabotage us, you know? The fact might be I'm very impatient, or the fact might be that I struggle with self-control, or whatever that fact might be about my behavior. The truth is, I've been given a heart that has been united with the heart of Christ. And his Spirit lives within me, and the fruit of the Spirit is patience. And the fruit of the Spirit is self-control. Those are the truths. We understand this, right? So until we can come to terms with that in our own hearts, then we can enter into this conversational thing with our kids where we begin to help nurture their value of their own hearts. So with that, I found that one of the best ways that we can encourage this with our children is to create a space for our kids to find voice for their own hearts. This might be really challenging for some of us as parents who don't like hearing difficult things out of the mouths of our children. We might want to shut their voice down. And yet, I think the way that we can nurture the value of a human heart is to give it safe space to have voice. We want our children to be able to speak. what's in their heart. We want our children to be able to express what's in their heart. Even if it's convoluted, doesn't make sense, chaotic, full of emotion and sometimes rage and sometimes like, just, I don't know, what do you call that? You call that passion? You call that maybe someone who's stumbling to try to find their voice? Maybe you call that immaturity? It's all those things. But it's still a voice that's connected to their heart. And so regardless of how immature it is, how loud it gets, how uncontrolled it might seem for us who like things very much in control, it's still important for us to value the voice that our children have. And I think what that does is it in turn communicates to them, your heart is valuable. It's not until they realize that their heart is valuable that they'll be willing to guard it. So one of the things that we've done, and you can do these things around the dinner table, you can do them in the living room after dinner when you're having dessert, up at a meadow when you're watching the summer sunset. We've done that. We've had seasons where Tuesday night was always sunset night. And every Tuesday throughout a summer, I remember us doing this, we would pick a different place that we would watch the sunset as a family. It might be 11 Mile Reservoir. It might be up at the meadow. It might be out at Painted Rocks. It might be somewhere. Sometimes they were awesome. Sometimes they were duds. It really wasn't about the sunset. So the three things that I want to bring to you, I've shared with some of you in the past. The first one is what we call high lows. The second one is called truth talks. And the third one is called dream sessions. So this is one way that we can encourage our children's voice and we can actually help them value what's in their hearts. And so high lows, we would do this a few times a week, often around the dinner table, sometimes even when we had guests come over for dinner. It was always really fun. In fact, we have a family living with us and they're little boys who are like 8 and 10. We started this early when they first moved here in March, and now sometimes when we're having dinner with them, they'll be like, let's do high lows. So after a while, they initiate this, which is always fun. High lows, it's just what it sounds like. I mean, we talk about the highlight of our day and the low light of our day. You can have more than one. You don't even have to have one. If you don't have a low, that's a good day. If you don't have a high, let's talk about that, you know? So as they grew, then the high lows kind of converted into something a little more in depth. Because high lows for little kids, you know, it might be whatever, you know, it's fun. Just explore that with your kids. But you might find it surprising when they start talking about their lows, what really comes out. This is a safe place. You know, they're eating a meal. They're around their best people. We're talking about highs and lows. We're not just zeroing in on the bad stuff of life, right? But when it comes time for them to share their lows, it's amazing to me what comes out. It's usually very honest, and sometimes it's very painful. And so for us to create an atmosphere in our home where we can have that kind of conversation, I think that's very rich. And it brings value to their hearts, and it gives voice to their hearts. The next one is what I call truth talks. And we would only do these maybe a couple, three times a year. It wasn't all the time. But I can tell you this. We did one last week. So this is something where we're not just talking about littles. We're talking about, essentially, we're talking about family and community. And we're talking about creating a space where people can honestly share what's going on in their hearts. So it's essentially a family meeting, but I don't like that term because I had negative connotations about family meetings growing up, right? That was always the time when somebody was getting in trouble, you know? So it's less about that. Truth talks are fun because, you know, they just give everybody an equal voice to share, if they want to, what's going on in their heart. And I guess if you want anyone to share what's rolling around in their heart, then the first thing you need to do is create a safe space for that, right? So here's a few of the sort of boundaries or parameters. I guess you can call them ground rules for truth talks. The first one is easy, right? No name calling. So what we wanted nothing that resembles the accuser there. right? So we wanted nothing that resembled the accuser. There might be accusation brought up in the sense that you did this to me, well, maybe or maybe not. What's probably more important is, and that made me feel like this, sort of thing, right? So the first one is easy, no name calling. The second one can be a little bit more of a challenge, especially if the conversation gets a little heated or pointed at specific issues, and that is that only one person talks at a time. And sometimes, if things got a little bit rowdy, then we would pull out the talking stick. Or what I learned that living with some Native Americans at some point, where they had this ritual where they would have this stick, and if you were holding the stick, then you were the only one who was able to talk. And it didn't necessarily have to go around the circle. It could popcorn back and forth. But if you had something to say after someone else, then you just simply raise your hand. And if they wanted to hand you that stick, then they were willing to listen to what you had to say. A lot of times we did away with the stick after a while. It's great when you're like on a hike or something like that, or backpacking or something like that. You just grab a stick. We like to use a carabiner, actually, sometimes. I remember us doing that a time or two. Because what the carabiner represents to me is trust. So anyway, whatever it is that you guys find, sometimes it's important to have this so that the person holding the talking stick is the only one who speaks. We could shift out of that one at a time rule if someone started asking questions that began a dialogue. Say I had the talking stick and I began to ask some questions, then it just kind of opened up a little bit. But for us, at least initially, it was important for us to kind of, again, we're creating a safe space for people to voice what's in their heart. If you get talked over and all of a sudden, like, what you had to say gets ambushed by what someone else felt so important to say on top of you, then that's not a very safe place for your heart, right? So that's the point of that. Sometimes it would actually turn kind of like, well, it would often involve tears, and sometimes it got intense in our truth talks. And so sometimes we would have to have what we call, like, I would have to, and this isn't like classic institutional stuff. I never wanted it to go there, but sometimes I would have to intervene, to be honest. And I would literally say, okay, here for the next couple of minutes, why don't you just talk to me and tell me directly what you're feeling instead of your sister? And they would be able to hear, the sister would hear what's going on, and then I would turn to the sister and I'd be like, what do you think about that? What do you have to say about that? So it's still getting voiced, but it's not like, you hear what I'm saying? All right, enough of that. It's like, here's where, like, there's some traps for us as parents. Devaluing your kid's heart by simply not listening. I mean, we just simply want to listen to our kids. I mean, I tend to shift into fix-it mode too fast. Sometimes I even start to tell my kids how they're supposed to feel if I'm not careful. You shouldn't feel that way. Well, no, that's not the point. The point is to just hear and put value to their voice and to value their heart. Because honestly, that we're going to get more into this in a second, but that's one of the things that helps them guard their hearts, for from it flows the wellspring of life. As they're moving into, you know, preteen years and into their adolescent years, and there's all of these choices and all of these decisions that they're going to have to be making. So this being said, there was actually a third kind of rule of thumb. So the first one was no name callings. One person speak at a time. We don't talk over each other. And the third one is no one could run away, actually. We might pause for dessert or tea or whatever, but even if the tensions rose, we established early that if you left the room, we're all going to wait until you come back before we finish up. So those were some things that we established, you know. I would say that even though there were tears often, I would say that 90% of the time we prayed for each other. You guys remember that? Spend a lot of time in our culture, family, being able to take the things that were shared and bring them to the Father. Again, our role was not to be God. Our role was to bring them to God, right? All right. So the third one here, we had high lows, we had truth talks, and the third one was dream sessions. I'll just speak briefly on this one. These are especially good during sunsets. You know, dream sessions, they're not the same as goal setting. If I'm a type A dad, then I'm going to convert a dream session into a goal session, and it's not about that. It's really just about the freedom to voice what's kind of rolling around in their heart, even if it's nonsensical. Because we can learn some things from our dreams. Like, I remember having a dream session once. Sorry, Zoe, I'm going to bring this one up, right? Yeah, two thumbs up for that. All right. And she was a little girl, and I remember when we asked, you know, like, what do you dream about? Like, what would you like to experience or do or see or, you know, be a part of before, you know, it's all said and done? What would you like to do? And she said, I would like to have a pet alligator. Now, if I was rational dad, I would have been like, nah, it's silly. You can't have a pet alligator. Those things eat too much. They might even eat you, you know? No, it was really like more of a question of, oh, really? Tell me what's going on there. Like, why do you want a pet alligator? Yeah. And I remember we landed on something reminiscent of this. Basically, the reason why she wanted a pet alligator was because she thought that of all the animals, no one would want a pet alligator. Right? Oh, yes. You have such a heart of compassion for the disenfranchised and those marginalized in our universe. We want you to have a pet. No, wait. No, no, we're not. It's, no. But you see where we go with that, right? So dreams can be a bit of a window into the deeper things of the heart. And so it's good to have those dream sessions on occasion. And again, the nice thing about a dream is you do not have to convert it into a goal. Right, Zoe? Sure, if you want to have a pet alligator, go for it. After you move out of my house and start paying your... No, I'm just kidding. So that being said, I just wanted to encourage those three things to help us bring this idea about valuing the wellspring of your life, really. And the way that we value it is we give it voice, because honestly, even as adults, to this day, some of us really struggle with advocating for our own hearts. Advocating for what's true about us, like what our values are, matter. And in order for us to be true to who we really are, even as adults, we have to guard our own hearts. We have to set healthy boundaries. We have to do all of these things as adults, right? And so wouldn't it be great if we were raising our kids from early ages with that as a natural part of their existence? Because if you think about it, I mean, it's easy for them as they face the decisions that might take them and even us away from our hearts. You know, essentially what you're doing as a parent is you're helping them become more comfortable with their hearts so that when they're tempted to compromise who they really are, that will be very uncomfortable for them. They'll feel like they're living contrary to who they really are more and more. Get what I'm saying? So at least that's my theory, and I think it's working. I don't know. I just like that idea that our kids have beautiful hearts that are worthy of valuing and need voice. And as adults, so do we. We have this really important process of guarding our hearts, for from it flows a wellspring of life. Because I think if our hearts are devalued, then our relationship with Christ is stunted. And it's usually stunted into a couple of different other categories that we'll call faith, but really isn't so much about faith. One of the stunts and one of the categories that our hearts could go into, or our faith could go into, is actually an intellectual assent. Or maybe it could shift over into this moral code of conduct of religion. But really, at the core of this, we want our kids, who are eventually going to be kind of guided by their hearts, since their heart is the seat of their life and it's the wellspring of life, that when Christ enters their life, it's into their hearts that he comes, right? It's into his heart that we have communion with God. It's into our hearts. And so anyway, we don't want that place devalued at all. So the things that are going to sustain us through the highs and the lows is this connection with God at the heart level. And that's the thing that we're encouraging. So if the first nugget is to teach our kids to watch over their hearts with all diligence, then the second idea I'd like to share is to help our kids build a relationship with wisdom. In other words, learn how to make good decisions. And again, I was saying that all of this is coming out of Proverbs 4. So let's start in verse 1 there. Hear, O sons, the instruction of a father, and give attention that you may gain understanding. For I give you sound teaching. Do not abandon my instruction. When I was a son to my father, tender and the only son in the sight of my mother, then he taught me. So this is teaching at a young age. He taught me, and he said to me, let your heart hold fast my words. Let my commandments, keep my commandments and live. And then verse 5 here, with the big exclamation point, acquire wisdom, acquire understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her. Who is her? I mean, that's the personification of wisdom. Do not forsake wisdom, and she will guard you. So one of the things about guarding the heart then is nurturing a relationship with wisdom. Love her, and she will watch over you. The beginning of wisdom is acquire wisdom, that in all of your acquiring, you gain understanding. So there's this thing about wisdom that I wanted to emphasize. As we prize her and as we, you know, find honor because we've embraced wisdom, she'll place a garland of grace on our heads. She'll present crowns of beauty over our lives. I mean, when you daydream about who your children are going to become, these are the kind of things that you hope for, right? So at the heart of all of this is the idea that as a dad, I felt like it was one of my roles, and as a mom, it would be one of your roles, is to help them make good decisions. And let me just pause there for a second and just speak on something, I mean, just in a nanosecond, that I want to actually share more on the next time I talk about raising kids. There's this notion that if our children grow up and start making bad decisions, it's because of our failings as a parent. And I don't believe that to be true. I believe that each one of us as human beings, we come to an age of accountability where we have to actually answer before God himself. And that happens, I think, a little earlier in life than we think. But we do carry what happens in our children's lives. We carry that so close. So I heard it said this week when I was having a chat with somebody, you know, small kids, small problems, big kids, big problems. And so it's hard for us as parents of adult children, and again, I was just going to touch on this, I'm going to share more on it later, to not carry a weight that's not ours to bear. I mean, it's really not ours. Again, we do have this sense of, man, what if, or where did I go wrong, or all of these things where shame just wants to come in and be that sledgehammer. And I just want to assure you that the Father knows your heart, and the Father's working with your kids, and ultimately, he's the one who's responsible to help raise them now that they are adults and they're making their choices, right? So that being said, think about the thousands of forks in the road that your kids are going to face this week. We can't make all the decisions for them. And how cool would it be to help our kids develop a relationship with wisdom? So as a practical way of doing this, what Tiffany and I would do is we would purposefully give our children decisions to make. We would make things up. just as an exercise. So in the inconsequential things of life, we would help nurture this. And so along with those choices, we would explain the results of those choices. Like, hey, if you choose to do this, then this is what's going to happen. And if you choose to do this, then this is what's going to happen. And then give them some time. You get to choose. I mean, when they were little. And it wasn't like the big, scary things of life that they had to make choices. I was like, what kind of ice cream do you want? Or what movie are we going to watch? Or whatever. But we intentionally gave them choices. And then as often as we could, we tried to attach to that some logical consequence that was going to be the result. So we did this intentionally about things that, like I said, didn't really matter. But it was really important. And then there were times when, you know, it started to matter more. And it might come across something like this. Okay, you choose. You can either finish washing the dishes, and then you can go have your evening with your friends at the movie theater, or you can run off and slam your door again. And if you do that, you're staying home tonight, and the door's coming off its hinges for a week. Pretty clear. They get to make their choice. Guess what happened when the door got slammed? This is the part about it. Regardless of if it's inconsequential or a big deal, we always had to follow through on that natural consequence we told them would happen if they chose this or that, good or bad, easy or hard. The door had to come off. If she slammed that door, the door had to come off. If I had voiced that already as this is what's going to happen if you choose this, then it was a willful act, and she was essentially like, all right, we'll see. Well, she saw for a whole week out the door, and everybody saw in the door because there was no door. All right. Anyway, you get this. I wanted our home to model the kingdom, like really with both grace as well as like the sowing and reaping thing. And so threaded through the core of all of this is a hope that our children will be able to hear the voice of God in their decisions, to nurture relationship with wisdom so that when they are faced with those thousand forks in the road, they could actually pause for a second and have the voice of the Lord chime in the way of wisdom and help direct them. I mean, in James 1:5 is really clear for us here on this. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God who gives to all generously, without reproach. In other words, he does not keep a record of wrong, and he will give it to you liberally. He'll just give it to you, wisdom. And so to me, hearing the voice of God and experiencing the wisdom of God, it's one and the same to me, honestly. Wisdom and understanding, they come from God communicating his heart, communicating his thoughts to us. And so to kind of close this up, that kids who grow up with a sense of value on their heart, and that they can trust their intuition as they learn how to be led by the wisdom of the Lord. I think these kids are the ones who grow up into adults who are less dysfunctional than maybe we were as parents. Tiffany and I were having this conversation, like, raising kids 20 years ago is actually different than raising kids right now. And all of the great advice we may have now may not be as relevant as it was for us then. So that's why today was about some overarching ideas. About valuing the heart, guarding the heart, teaching our kids to make good decisions, nurturing relationship with wisdom, the voice of God, bringing that into the culture of our family. It's kind of a pretty foundational thing for us. And it can be, I believe, for any family because it can be for the family of God. It's like the scriptures are helping us discover this. And then I want to bless you, parents. I'm going to bless all y'all. What's up, giggles? Nah, it wasn't her. Some of you are like, which? Some of you are like, which was that? That's right. No name calling. Right? So fun. It's great, though, isn't it? I mean, Chris, introduce us to your friends for a second, because I got a little story. Okay, David, Connor, and Stephanie, dear friends of yours from Charlottesville, came to visit. So yesterday you guys went to 11 Mile Reservoir and you were playing around out there, and then Stephanie told me a story that she just decided to go swimming, right? You just jumped in. So here's the beauty of that. The childlike heart that was in you to do that, may we never lose that. I love the song that you brought this morning during worship. May we never lose our wonder, that sense of wonder, bright-eyed and mystified. May we be just like a child. And so even as parents, and some of us who are moving on in years and now we're grandparenting or whatever, I just want to just bless you with that sense of wonder. As you imagine and dream over your own kids, may you never lose that wonder of who they can be. And there might be some facts that are like glaring at you about their life that don't line up with what you had hoped or dreamt of, but I just want you to stay into that, lean into that space of saying, Father, show me who that child is. And may I never lose the wonder of who you created in that child. So with that, would you stand and just let me pray for you? So Lord, thank you for the beautiful privilege of raising children, and it's hard and scary, and it requires so much. And so I just acknowledge, Lord, a dependence on you as the Father to help us parent. And so I bless each one of you who are parents and grandparents. I bless each one of you who will be parents, that you would discover more fully just who you are as a child and who God is as a good Father. And I pray that that would spark that sense of wonder in you. And I pray that that would easily translate into how you relate to your children. I just pray that you would experience joy in your parenting. I pray that you would experience just a sense of peace knowing that Jesus sincerely cares for your children. And that as you release them into his love, into his care, it's in no way a disengagement of who they are and who they are to you as a parent, but it's very much a trust that he is going to just take care of them, and that he may have a place for you in that, definitely, but it's not your ultimate responsibility. It's his. They're his. Just like you're his. And so, Father, we want to thank you for just the encouragements this morning. And I pray that, Lord, you would strengthen each family represented here. That, Father, you would strengthen them by your presence in their home. And by virtue of your light entering into their space, God, I just thank you that you're going to displace any form of darkness, any foul spirit that would want to bring division, disunity, Lord God, that would want to devalue hearts and want to silence their voices, that would want to disengage them from their relationship with wisdom and understanding. So Holy Spirit, I pray that you would enter into each home fresh and new. And so Spirit of Revelation, as you reveal the man Christ Jesus to each one of us and to our children, I thank you that you are committed to see us through to the end. So thank you, God, for all of this. In your mighty name, Jesus, amen.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you have any questions, please drop us a line at nccfcolorado@mac.com.